6 of the Newspeak podcast. So in the first take of this I did, part of the delay was the fact that I forgot what episode number we were on. So I had to sort of work out, I had to count to 6 in my head during that period, which obviously for me as a historian and politics teacher is too hard. It's something I'm not capable of doing. But I'm delighted to say I'm joined once again by Joe Thompson.
Hello.
Whose sound now works. And also by Steph again. Hello, Steph.
Afternoon.
So two of us live in houses with children, and therefore Joe might live in a house with children, but they're just not his. So the fact is that we might just get interrupted and these things happen. But we're just going to soldier on regardless. Since we last did a podcast, loads and loads of things have happened, and I guess we're just going to try and work our way through those things, including but not limited to. Mamdani, the shutdown, the budget in America, reform of their tax plans, the carefully by election, and the whole stuff about the White House ballroom and all that jazz. Oh, and in fact, that doesn't include Joe's topic of the week, which is...
The Dutch election.
The Dutch elections! Joe, if you don't know how Denk got on, you've got until that point to try and find out how Denk did. Because and also Party for the Animals, but those being two of my top Dutch parties. So
I'm surprised you've not committed to a Dutch special and gone Dutch.
Maybe I didn't have enough Dutch courage. Right. Okay. So speaking of people showing courage, this is such a bad link. Let's talk first about the thing that all of my students have wanted to talk about all week, which is Mr. Mamdani in New York.
Congratulations to him.
Yes, I'm sure he's listening.
He's a man of the people, yeah. And not busy at all now, I suspect.
So could someone just explain to me why it is notable that this chap has won? What is interesting or notable about Mamdani?
I think there's a fair few things here. One, he's young. Two, he is, correct me if I'm wrong, he describes himself as Indian and Asian American.
Yeah.
So that's new. Three, he took on literally the establishment, capitalized with Andrew Cuomo, with a vastly more funded campaign. I think lots of his donations came from very small donations from regular Joe people, not to use your name there, Joe. Is that enough? Does that sound significant?
I would just like to point out, though, that from my brief research into him, when you said he was young...
He's 53.
Yeah, he's younger than me, so therefore he is young, because I'm incredibly youthful, despite what one of my students said to me this week about whether or not I could remember the 1974 general election. But... The key here is that he actually was born in Kampala, Uganda. He was born in Kampala. So that means he can't go on to be president, I think, unless he was born to American citizen parents.
No, I think that he has at least one of his parents is Indian who moved to Uganda.
So I think that dream may be over before it begins, guys, I'm sorry to say. So,
the mayor of New York is a big deal, you know. Yeah. You would take that.
Yeah, it is a big deal. So he beat Cuomo, who is the uber establishment Democrat, who then, after being the uber establishment Democrat, then decided to run as an independent, which may have in
Did
its
he
own
decide, or with his yeah. questionable history of sexual conduct, was there a distancing from the Democrats?
And I'm not saying these two things are related, but after the questionable questionable behaviour, he was then endorsed by Trump, wasn't he? So they may or may not be related. I'm not saying that Trump is necessarily looking for that in a candidate, I don't think it put him off. No. So, Joe, what are we talking here? What does this show? What is going on in New York or America that this demonstrates?
I think this plays very significantly into the debate within the Democratic Party about what do they do, how do they recover after losing to Donald Trump again? Because there is there's an argument regarding what path the party should take. One path is to play it uber safe and be very moderate and very boring and probably run someone like Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky.
Gavin Newsom.
A white guy, white man in there, you know, play it very safe, you know. Or the other path, which is, no, we need to be more populist and we need sort of a left-wing Trump-esque character, which I think people like Mamdani, obviously Mamdani can't run, but he represents that. And you could see sort of the battle within the Democratic Party played out with, as you were saying, Cuomo, who, in my opinion, represents everything that is wrong with the Democratic Party. I mean, the fact that you could have someone who resigned as governor of New York because he was a sex pest. And then...
Is that the legal definition?
Sorry?
Is that the legal term?
Sexual misconduct.
Aficionado.
Yeah. he's allowed to run in the Democratic primary and like...
hang on, let's just dial back on that. He's not allowed to run, is he? That's not how primaries work. He's put himself in as a sexual aggressor takeover of the primary system, like Trump.
He's still got a lot of support from the Democratic establishment, which...
Well, I mean, he's so well connected.
I mean, what I would say is, right, so people are... I've had conversations with quite a lot of people, because this has quite big cut-through. It's had a lot of cut-through with our students. Students who don't normally know what's going on can come and talk to me about Mamdani.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is Mamdani's social media has been impeccable, for want of a cooler social media word. You know, all the students who are on TikTok and Instagram are commenting about just how great the campaign has been done, how well it's been done on social media, and quite transparent fundraising, which you don't see from the other candidates.
But I think
it's not the rate, like Curtis Silver got a lot of traction.
And his beret.
Yeah, and the fact that he got shot 5 times in the back of the cab by the Gambino crime family.
That's the thing that Curtis Silver and 50 Cent have in common, is that they've been shot multiple times. So there you go. Well,
the odds on Mamdani at the start were 1%. So to go from 1 to over the big 50 is impressive.
Absolutely. So whoever had him early in betting terms has done very well.
They've done very well.
I think one of the things that I would push back on slightly about what it tells us about the big debate is that Trump, a lot of Trump supporters don't necessarily care about Trump's policies or know about Trump's policies. It's vibes. It's like vibes driven politics. They couldn't put Trump on the political spectrum further to the left or further to the right, but it's vibes and messaging.
Like, and asking a reform voter what are the policies other than immigration. It's just a big gap.
Absolutely. And I think that Mamdani has done, it's very positive. It's about things that people in New York care about, which is, you know, rental reforms and limitations, public transportation, things like that. They are left-wing things, yeah, sure. But they're also the sorts of things that if you're even a Republican mayoral candidate in New York, you wouldn't not talk about rental reforms and you wouldn't not talk about transportation. So I think there are only so many lessons on a national scale that Democrats can take from this. And it also sort of ignores the fact that Democrats have done well everywhere in elections that took place in the last week. They did well. They won the Virginia. The gubernatorial elections, one of my favorite words, gubernatorial.
You even did well in Mississippi.
They won all these sort of local elections and things like that. But it won't matter.
At a time when Trump has cut SNAP as part of his one big beautiful bill, so it's it's physically been cut. Then there's the cuts that have been the consequence of the shutdown. So actually, access to food is an incredibly important message given the context. It's not just your usual left-wing fodder. It's actually like very pertinent for this window of time that we're in.
For context, for the dear listener, SNAP is benefits, like low income
supplemental families. Nutritionary
assistance
program.
Yeah, it's if you struggle to buy food.
It's a food stamp program. Yeah, you check out, you get vouchers and you check them out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you two have done incredibly well there, because I could have told you none of the words associated with SNAP, so well done, other than assuming that it was something to do with Rice Krispies. But I suppose what I go to, you mentioned SNAP and cutting through. So that sort of links us very neatly to the government shutdown. So the government shutdown in America is the thing that's going on. I'm just going to quickly say what a shutdown is in case we haven't listened before. So
yeah, I think Wednesday it reached the longest. No, that was that was when it became textbook worthy.
Yeah, so essentially, when they say the government shuts down, what they're really talking about is that they have failed to reach an agreement to keep funding all aspects of the government, and therefore services that are deemed non-essential, like national parks or other,
sport officers.
Yeah, sport officers. Various stuff. So they're having to cut back on air traffic control. And in fact, that led to this brilliant video that I saw last night, which was a sort of MAGA talking head on Fox, talking about how pilots need to essentially man up and deal with things without, they need to trust their instincts. What could go wrong?
To the thing I sent you this week.
Yeah, go ahead.
This nice little link to, one, I want to say, Trump, the MAGA supporters should be pointing out the fact that they also sacked all the air traffic controllers, claiming that they were too DEI and therefore had no knowledge, which is obviously wrong. But two, there was a great statistic out this week that sort of 50% of men polled thought they could just, if they had to, land a commercial jet. And I feel that's very much, that I feel like that 50% would be the MAGA 50%. Sure, the plane is crashing, but don't worry, I've played it on the PlayStation.
Yeah, well, there is that, I mean, there are loads of polls that say, do you think, which of these animals could you take on and beat in a fight? And there's a not inconsiderable number of men think they could beat a bear in a fight and stuff like that. Yeah, I might be able to beat a koala bear, but I'm not sure, bigger than that, I'm not sure I'll be able to do it. And also, I should take this opportunity to qualify my use of the word manfully on a previous podcast, which I'm coming for some serious stick for from more than one person. Well, manfully. I said that you dealt with something manfully, and I got told off for it. So I would
You might want to also flag up that koalas, I think they have lots of STIs, so... Don't wrestle those either to prove your manfulness.
There's so many things happening in this conversation. Either way, I do not... when I said manfully, I'm using it in the dictionary definition of the word, which is to say dealing with something effectively and with determination. But in future, I'll use a different word so as not to offend people, therefore...
I mean, if we're offending, at least someone's listening.
Yeah, that's true. they might not be listening anymore, but there we go. So now there is a government shutdown, and as Steph said, it is now a record-length shutdown. So the question is, and this links back to what you were saying about SNAP benefits, who's being blamed? Who do the public find to be at fault when it comes to this shutdown? Or is it just a kind of curse on all their houses?
Well, I think... So the narrative that the Republicans are putting out there is that this is actually, a very commendable shutdown, because if they agree to the Democrat terms, that's reinstating some of Medicaid, increasing the deficit, ballooning costs, and they're standing strong by the Trump cuts, which, they benefit a very minor number of people, but tax cuts are generally a very popular policy. The Democrats, by the same token, are saying it's noble that they're not agreeing to the budget because they're trying to reinstate those key medical benefits, which ironically would actually support more poor red state voters, but that's a whole other question. So that the shutdown is neither party is going to give way here, because they're claiming this narrative that the shutdown is great, and for Trump it really is, because when you shut down an agency, that power over appointment or policy falls more into his lap, so he's gaining a lot of power at the same time as racking up masses of cost. And no poll at the moment shows it particularly biting him in the ass yet, that he's not become particularly unpopular because of it. So he's doing all right, I would say. I don't know if it, this week they put out some information that, unlike other previous shutdowns, there's not going to be back pay. So all those people out of work are likely to not really see any of that. So that's one.
There's not going to be back pay.
Oh, historically, you typically get back pay, and a letter came out at the start of the shutdown saying, you know, as it's resolved, there will be back pay. But the latest information this week is that that claim was removed from the recent communications. Ooh. So that, I think, is really going to hurt as it rolls on. There's not that sense anymore of, well, I just have to get over the hurdle and then I'll get my wages. Those payments seem to have now gone. Well,
I mean, it's something like 4 million people work for the federal government. So
is that not including the military, or do you think that's including the military? Because the US military is obviously huge. But
the military's got about 1 million people in it.
No NHS then, is it?
No.
We need more people in the NHS. But I suppose if you work for the federal government, you are disproportionately likely to be a Democrat, aren't you? Like, not military notwithstanding here, but you are more likely to be Democrat facing because you're more likely to be living in a city or a town. Yes.
What I will say though is, when I think it will become inevitably unpopular when you start turning up, when your mail doesn't get delivered and you start
your bins don't go.
Yeah, and it's like chaos, which is currently happening. I mean, because I think airport security in the US is another government agency, and apparently loads of people are not turning up for work, as is understandable, because you're not getting paid. So when people all of a sudden realize that government is actually there in your life to help you, which I know is a shocking revelation, and when it's not there, actually life becomes a lot harder, then I think it will very quickly become very sour. I mean, in a really weird twist of events, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has the accolade for like the nutsiest member of Congress ever,
Lauren Boebert.
Oh, well, she's up there. She's up there.
Yeah.
Lauren is up there. But she all of a sudden has sort of had a Damascene conversion and has begun to be very eerily reasonable, and has turned against the Republican Party and has blamed them for basically being really disruptive and not helping the lives of ordinary Americans.
Yeah, well, she's furious that her two children are now going to have to pay double insurance premiums because of the Medicaid changes. So
who would have thought?
Thought that cutting Medicaid led to cuts in Medicaid.
Yeah. I suppose there are two factors there. Number one, are people pro-Trump or are they ideological? So in her case, you would argue she is, because she was one of the people who voted to bring down the previous speaker, Kevin McCarthy. So she's obviously relatively ideological in terms of her outlook. But also,
but she wanted to be Trump's VP, you know. I think she's just...
And what a VP she would have been.
The combo would have blown everything we think about when we teach about how you present a balanced ticket.
It when I said I wanted a woman to be on the ticket, this isn't what I meant. The other thing is that when things affect people, they tend to change their minds more. However, to contradict myself, as I like to do very often, I would point out that one of the most interesting things in recent years is that in America, people are no longer able to view things from outside the prism of their own media engagement. So
are
when
you bring back the graph?
Well, so what? When... Yeah, I'm back to the graph, yes. And I will never stop talking about that. So essentially, people... They showed, did a load of research during Biden and previously during Trump's first term, which was that if you thought the economy was good or bad, was entirely dependent on your partisan leaning. So those people who thought the economy was good under Biden were disproportionately Democrats. And those people who thought the economy was bad were disproportionately Republicans. Some might say it's just due to the absolute nonsense media they're consuming. But if we come then to this shutdown, if you do it by party ID, 5% of Democrats think the Democrats are to blame and 72% of them think Republicans are to blame. 5% of Republicans think Republicans are the blame, and 71% of them think it's Democrats. Amongst independents, they blame Trump. They blame Republicans over Democrats by 30-21, with 40% of people being both equally. So, essentially, if you are a Republican or a Democrat, you just blame the other party. And independents sort of mildly blame Donald Trump or the Republicans over the Democrats, but not by a huge margin. So it's, again, it's just so dependent on what form of nonsense media you consume.
Well, that is not a functional democracy, but I mean...
What? Well, again, to make... I'm so good at these links today. This is absolutely brilliant. Because that links to gerrymandering. And don't think, Steph, that I didn't notice you using the term ass before, which is, I think, because we're focusing in on America, you've used the American version of bottom.
Well, yeah, there was an article in The Guardian today about the rise of kids speaking Americanese, and I was like, oh, yeah. Felicity did ask if she could put something in the garbage this morning.
Oh, so. No! Right, so...
But we're not, you know, it's not like we're big Coco Melon consumers. I don't know what we're watching to become Americanized, but there you go. Yeah, I joined where our youth are going.
Now, can we really talk about gerrymandering and California's Proposition 50, I believe it was?
Although explain the old gerrymandering.
I feel like I've just been talking for a
minute. Oh, you want me to do it?
So I'll let one of you go.
Joe, are you passionate about gerrymandering?
I mean, very.
Okay, you go for it then.
Gerrymandering is when you draw the boundaries of the congressional districts. So each state gets a number of representatives proportional to its population. And because state legislatures in the US, in a lot of states, get to decide where the boundaries are drawn, they will often draw them to benefit their own party. So I think Wisconsin has like 5 congressional seats. And the way Wisconsin is split politically, it should be there should be three Democrats and 2 Republicans. But because the maps in Wisconsin are very gerrymandered, you get 4 Republicans and 1 Democrat. So it skews the results really significantly.
And we should say in some cases it's legitimized. The Constitution does allow like an affirmative action kind of gerrymander to increase majority representation and to improve representation in Congress. But on the whole, that's not what it's used for.
I mean, but let's be clear. Both parties have done it, but the only states that have nonpartisan committees that set district boundaries, they're almost exclusively in blue states. So that is why California required a ballot initiative in order to make that happen. California was responding to Texas. Texas now has 38 congressional districts. It's the second biggest state in terms of representation in the country now. And so it could have been, Texas gerrymandering makes a massive difference. And essentially what the method is, packing your opponent's constituents into as few districts as possible, so then you create a whole load of slightly more competitive than that, but still basically weighted to you seats elsewhere, whereas they win that one seat by a million miles but can't compete anywhere else.
You could track them as well, where you split them up.
Yes, and so these are, it is cheating. It's cheating in terms of making sure that there's a limited chance of you losing any seats. And this is one of the many reasons that House seats are very... there are very few that are actually in play in any given election. Very few that can actually change hands out of those 435 House seats.
But so I think a really good example of that is I always remember when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got elected. So she's, very young, very charismatic. And Nancy Pelosi just turned around and go, well, a glass of water could have won that district. Because
New York's 14th district is one of the many examples we use where the kind of combination of the primary process and gerrymandering has created that hyper-partisan Congress, hasn't it? Because if you think about it, if you have a whole load of very safe seats, if you are a Democrat, it is not rational to select a centrist. You are thinking, well, I may as well pick someone who's got highly Democrat values in the primary. So Joe Crowley, who's one of the top Democrats back in the day, a few years ago, in Congress, he goes up for his primary challenge. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stands. Democrats go, oh, I like this left-wing message. They vote her in. The selection is easier than the harder than the election, isn't it? So yeah. In those seats, if you think about it, if all those Democrat seats become more left-wing and all those Republican seats become more right-wing, you end up with a much more divided Congress. So now we've got California, which is saying, we gon' gerrymander. We're going to gerrymander real hard.
Yeah. It should be said, though, Democrats also, I think the most gerrymandered state is Illinois, which is a Democrat stronghold. So both parties are just as guilty.
It's definitely the case that both do it. Mm. Although that said, imagine going to the Supreme Court now and saying, well, shall we ban gerrymandering then? What's the Supreme Court going to say?
No.
It's going to say no.
Even the Democrat, a Democrat Supreme Court would struggle to ban it. There's nothing in there, is there? States run their own elections.
The only way
you could ban it is if it's you can prove it's racist.
You are a country that can find a justification for spending billions of dollars under the guise of freedom of speech, then you are also a country that can work out how to ban gerrymandering under equal representation, being in the 14th Amendment. I mean, given that they just make an argument out of absolutely nowhere, the Supreme Court, regardless, I'm pretty sure there's sound justification for outlawing it. And it would be an incredibly reasonable constitutional amendment you could argue should have bipartisan support to make a fair system of determining congressional districts. But it's simply not going to happen because...
Yeah, no congressperson is going to vote to give away their advantage.
Turkeys do not vote for Christmas, apart from people voting to cut Medicare and then being annoyed that they've cut Medicare.
Yeah. Well, don't forget that it was the MAGA faction that stopped, even that got in the way of Trump's attempt to repeal it by saying the repeal wasn't big enough. Mm. Like, this party cannot get it together.
I'm pretty sure MAGA faction's a song. Do the MAGA faction with me. Maybe it could be the new theme tune, given how popular it is. So on that note, shall we segue from an American shutdown to Rachel Reeves's forthcoming budget, which may or may not include income tax increases?
Woo!
Joe, you are a dyed-in-the-wool hardcore left-winger. What should we expect to see in the budget and why?
For the first budget ever, I'm actually quite invested in this because I actually pay taxes now.
Oh, poor sweet summer child.
Just open the payslip. Where's 100 quid gone?
£100. Oh,
National insurance actually exists. Blessings. So the Labour Party, in their infinite wisdom, despite knowing that they would win the last election, even if they ran a dustbin as their main candidate, decided that
which some might argue they did.
Some might argue they did. I am leaning towards that view myself. They had the Ming Vase strategy where they decided they were going to upset no one. And as a result of that, they pledged not to raise income tax, VAT and corporation tax, and national insurance, which are the main levers a government can pull to raise money. Now, that's all well and good until you consider the chaotic world we live in. And because Rachel Reeves has also said that she won't borrow more, which is her other option, she now has a really big black hole. I think it's about 20 billion that she has to fill, and she's in a rock and a hard place.
Yeah,
we've been talking about this black hole since austerity. Has it Has it got smaller? Have we made any dents in the hole?
The hole seems to contract and then expand again.
It's weird that it gets really small around election time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so fundamentally, the UK has had very, very low growth since the financial crisis, hasn't it? You know, ever since 2008, we have been staring down a barrel of very, very low growth, which ultimately it means we've had a difficulty in paying for our obligations in terms of public services in relation to the amount of money we generate through the budget and through other revenue streams. And so a Labour government in 1997 that wanted to come in and do exciting, sexy things had the capacity to do that even on the low taxes that were in place at that time. A Labour government coming in now wanting to do sexy things doesn't have the money to do that. So ultimately, everyone's going to be very annoyed at them, and they're right to be annoyed at them to an extent, but like, the country's a total mess and you need to have money to fix it. So,
but they did promise the impossible.
Yeah. The Ming vase theory is just to explain that.
Yeah, I don't know what this vase thing is.
So it's basically back in the 90s, when Labour were running, if you read the Campbell diaries, they're all full of like Labour just before the elections, like, no one say anything stupid. No one do anything dumb. Don't go and have sex in a park. Don't, like, you know, don't say that weird racist thing you might say. Don't punch that person. You just do nothing, right?
Keep your hands to yourself.
Yeah, just chill. Everyone, just put up pictures of Tony and do it. And so they liken it to carrying a Ming vase very carefully across a hard floor, that you've just got to be super, super careful. But the problem is that if you say, we are going to upset no one, everything, we're going to spend more money and we're going to tax you less, everyone knows that's not possible. So now, in the terms of the sort of parlous financial state we've got, and then the addition of, say, Trump tariffs and all that sort of jazz, where are you supposed to get money to fix things from? How are you supposed to fix the prison system? How are you supposed to fix the education system? Where's it going to come from?
How are you going to have prisons that actually imprison people?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really fascinating thing. And in fact,
I am so curious what is the mistake? Like, what do they not look at some pictures? How does this happen?
That exists. From what I've read, I think it is literally on paper. They're a paper system.
Do they just call out, John's day to get out? Is anyone John?
It's me. Yeah, like, it's I.
It really cracked me up. It was like, he came back. I think the sex offender who accidentally got released came back 5 times and was like, you've not meant to have let me out. And the prison officers were just like, off you go, shoo, go away.
There is a really interesting website called Ground News, and it tells you what kind of political affiliation the news sources that are pushing a particular story are, if that makes sense. So, like, the stuff about people being released from prisoners is being very heavily pushed by right-wing news sources because they're wishing to blame Labour for it. But this obviously happened quite significantly often under the last government as well. This is not a rare thing to happen. It's not a very Labour, bad thing to happen. But it's not... Labour didn't come in and then say, tell you what you guys need to do, start releasing prisoners more randomly. Just release anyone. Do it on a lottery system.
It wasn't Labour who cut the number of prison officers by a third or something. So, like, it's an insane level of hypocrisy and audacity for the Tories to come out and be like, they're soft on crime, when it wasn't Labour who completely decimated the criminal justice system. Just to put it out there,
they should have. Yeah. If they wanted to be clever, they should have said they're soft on crime and soft on the causes of crime.
That would have been good.
That would have been a good line. But I'm not writing the Tory
strategy. You're available for hire.
I am available for hire at very reasonable rates. So, I mean, ultimately, this budget is... Look, if I were the Labour Party, if you're in a really weak position, it's really bad. But it's also really freeing. They can do what they want. Like,
I've read that we're now going to pay... If I understand, and I don't understand it correctly, we're going to pay for electric cars by the mile. So they're going to do what they're calling road pricing, I think. So
it just
seems to me like if you're an EV voter, I feel like you're, if you're an EV driver, I imagine you're a left-wing voter. I don't know, is that?
I think historically, yes.
If we were
during
that activity where we draw a typical Labour voter, I'd be tempted to put an EV vehicle.
Do Labour voters drive Teslas, though?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's one, the one word screaming Tesla towards that conversation is Tesla. I do not think the average Tesla drivers are left.
No, I suspect. Okay, well, with barring a Tesla, I imagine EV voters are left wing, and this just seems designed to annoy them because they've gone from being exempt from road tax and now they're only paid by the mile. But Rachel Reeves hasn't figured out how we're going to work out how far people go. We're just going to let them choose themselves.
It is fair, though, I suppose. I mean,
but cars literally drive on the road. Roads literally need to be paid for. EV cars are also heavy. They're heavier than an equivalent petrol car. And so one of the big problems of cars right now is they're getting bigger and heavier. And so that's one of the reasons that roads are more damaged. And so the other reason being that we cut council tax budgets so significantly that council taxes have to just do running repairs rather than actually resurfacing things properly. So now we've got cars that essentially are constantly damaging the roads, and EVs that are heavier are now they're not actually taking in any revenue for it. So that's the problem that comes. But I do see it. I mean, if you were...
It just seems like a damage to the base. It doesn't look like it's reaching out to your core lefty.
I mean, my argument would be, if they're going to break the tax promise, just do it big. Break it. Break it.
Go big or go home.
There's payslip again, and then decide if you want it or...
True, that is true. But like, if they're gonna like raise income tax to fill a black hole, no one's gonna like that. Satisfies no one. Mm. Like, no one understands that. No one.
Everyone will be angry regardless of the scale of the lift.
Yeah, like if they raise it to a degree where they actually have extra money to spend, and they can be like, look, we're spending more on the NHS, or...
But it's not, is it? We'll just be throwing it in the hole. We're not going to spend this money, right?
Well, I suppose it depends. They need to have some money to spend some money, though. And right now, they don't have any money. This all sort of links...
Maybe we should do, to promote another seamless link, what Trump is doing. And when we knock stuff down, we just get large corporations to build it instead.
Well,
we've already tried that. Didn't work.
Tried that in the past. Private-public partnerships.
PFI.
PFI stuff. But I suppose Labour is trapped between, you mentioned, a rock and a hard place. And if we could call the rock Nigel Farage and the hard place Zach Polanski, because right now loads of my students and also various other people I know are very excited about what Zach Polanski is saying, and is being a lot more outspoken than Labour are about various things, but much more kind of directly critical of reform. And much more outspoken about what they would do in terms of the Greens would do with regards to towards spending. Now, if you're Labour, you've got to... You're obviously in a slightly different position, which is that some of your voters are reform-targeted voters and some of your voters are left-wing voters. And it's quite hard to tailor a message to both of those simultaneously. You need to simultaneously be anti... crackdown on immigration... and spend money on infrastructure projects and making the country less bad. So, like, I suppose, how do Labour thread that needle?
They can't.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we've just... Politics has moved past a atmosphere or, time where you could have a broad-based social democratic party that sort of capitalises the left. I think that's dead. It's gone.
Well, maybe, but also the Carefully by-election, which may or may not be worked into a pun that is the title of this episode. So Labour lost, first, is the big headline. But the
after
second big headline
years.
Is Reform didn't win.
Who won?
Plaid Cymru. Plaid. Yeah. The plucky Welsh underdogs, who will probably be the Welsh government next year, under their
staging a bit of a comeback
under the Welsh Senate elections, which are going to be PR next year as well.
You say they're getting the textbook is wrong again. We're getting a new system.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited by the return of PR. Not seen in the UK since the 2019 European election, so that's exciting.
I think they're going closed list as well, so this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw this out there. I am not excited by variants of PR. I like an electoral system as much as the next man, but I'm not excited by the Hunt method versus closed list.
That idea that you don't know who you're voting for, I think is pretty alien to British voters. I know we all ignore the name and look at the logo, but actually to give that much control over to the party and who knows who they're sticking at the top of that list, I think that is pretty new.
That is fair.
Do they not publish it?
No.
Do they, they don't have to publish it?
Don't think so. I think that's the whole closed bit.
I like my lists like I like my pubs. I don't want that. How does that work? Closed. That doesn't work. I don't want a pub to be closed.
I'm so glad you went for pubs.
Yeah, okay. Fine. But, like, look, so the thing is, Labour lost, but what it also shows, because Labour's vote share went down so much, is Labour didn't lose popularity from 60% or whatever the vote to 10. They lost popularity to a certain degree, and then voters realised, well, we've got to vote either Labour or Plaid in order to not have Reform win. Because I think there is a ceiling to Reform voters. And in a lot of seats, we'll probably find tactical voting, which was massive in the last election, even bigger next time. Reform will definitely win more seats in the next election. That's a guarantee. But what we'll also see is a huge increase in tactical voting.
I think the next election will be utter chaos.
Keir doesn't like PR, does he?
Keir used to like PR, but then he got cold feet, didn't he?
It's because it's rubbish. No one should like PR unless you're the Netherlands.
We were playing on the Parliament website looking at bills in progress, and as far as I can tell, because I don't feel like it's getting spoken about, the one to abolish hereditary peers is doing very well.
Mm. I've got to be clear. I love the House of Lords. I have no ideological reason that you should keep hereditary peers, but I'm still a little bit sad about it. You know, like, some poor old fart who's got nothing else in his life is going to be jobless now.
I don't think that £300 meant a lot to the people who have a peerage. You and I would appreciate it.
Lord Dingleberry of wherever. Don't
certainly find £300 a day.
Oh.
Yeah.
to hand to the National Insurance man.
But I suppose, so the PR is, by definition, if you can win a general election, you don't want PR.
But
with all these... If Polanski is your man and you've got options on the left now, maybe you do.
But maybe if Labour get real cold feet and realise they could have a Reform majority, it could be like the
might reach out,
smash the glass in case of emergency option.
Labour will cease to exist if there is PR. It will carry on as a party. But Labour is not one political party. Labour is a coalition of voters.
That doesn't really work anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. Coming back to Turkey's voting for Christmas, if you're Labour, you are literally saying, we are happy to become one moderate social democratic party and one more clearly left-wing party and just every now and again team up at election times. This will segue to the Netherlands, but how many socialist parties do you think there are in the Netherlands? There's not one, there's quite a few.
I think there's about four.
Yeah, well, and my favourite party in the Netherlands, as you know, DENK.
DENK.
They're just called DENK. They're a party of broadly social democratic people of Turkish backgrounds.
Well, like, I'm afraid...
Well,
DENK did not gain or lose any seats.
Of course they didn't, because they've got a very clear constituency, haven't they?
It's not the monopoly on Dutch people of Turkish descent.
Yeah. As long as that proportion of the population stays relatively static, you're laughing. but I don't think it's specifically that, but they are primarily
they're primarily from that background. So it's an, they all cater to those of an immigrant and Muslim background, it is described as online. But
from what I can see, there's you have the Dutch Labour Party, you have the Socialist Party.
Groenlinks PVDA is a party. Yeah. They're left-wing, broadly speaking.
Denk is fairly left-wing.
Yeah.
Then you have the Party for the Animals.
Yeah.
And then you have...
How did they do?
They, like Denk, neither went up or down. Stayed on three.
Same amount of animals.
And if you are a representative of Party for the Animals and you would like to come on a moderately listened to and topical podcast, we would be delighted to have you on.
I'm emailing around Dutch MEPs. I'm sure I can widen the net to some Dutch MPs.
They could do a guest spot at your school to broaden the appeal. Right.
So if I could just say, if I just finish off this kind of rant, the thing is...
Yeah, because we're running out of time, says Google.
You can have PR, right? You can have PR, but you are... If you are Labour or the Conservatives, you are saying, I'm happy for my party to not really exist anymore.
Mm.
Then, I feel like Keir probably is there right now.
Yeah, probably. Well, it's funny. Just let's just let Joe finish by talking a little bit about the Dutch.
Are we on the ballroom?
Yeah, and we've got to go. We've got to go quick if we're going
to
do it.
The ballroom's down. It sort of turns out that while you need loads of permission to build stuff, that there's a bit of a grey area around knocking it down. And if you get your digger in fast enough, you're good to go. So he's knocked the ballroom down. And
East Wing.
The now he's asking the Winklevosses to build it back up.
And also, he's got like the worst taste on earth. So he's got that kind of like taste that you know when someone turns up in something that's gold and like, you know, the sort of people that just think that putting more shiny things on something. He's essentially vejazzled the White House. He's absolutely unbelievable what he's doing to it.
Did you see that thing where they have this bathroom called the Lincoln bathroom? Which wasn't built in Lincoln's time. I think it was built in the 1940s.
They built him a bathroom in honour of him.
Yeah.
This is the Lincoln toilet.
But the most American
toilet with
thing
a beard.
But like Trump tore it out. It was like too Art Deco for him. So he tore it out. And his excuse for this was like, I'm making it more Lincolnified. But I saw a picture of it. It's like black marble. And like,
maybe they've got like top hats available outside.
I mean, maybe they had black marble and, you know, nice sort of gold tinted mirrors in Lincoln's day. Who
but
knows?
Is the point here that
there are no rules surrounding Trump?
The extent to which
there are no checks and balances on this man.
Checks and balances only work insofar as you have people who are willing to use them. And the Trump Republican Party is not willing to hold him to account, therefore meaning that if you are having a big old discussion about whether a codified constitution inherently protects people better, it obviously does not in a circumstance of hyper-partisan support for one of the parties.
I am a massive fan of the UK's unwritten constitution.
Uncodified.
Uncodified.
No, did we not teach you well?
Yeah. It's not unwritten, Joe. It's uncodified.
It's written down, but yeah.
It is written.
Semantics.
Yeah.
I've shed all the information. but like...
Some of my college students.
but I just think the US constitution is just so... I don't get how you can just venerate one document.
Because don't forget, and this is a reference for Mr. Trump, Mr. Thorne and Mr. Thorne alone, the big question is, do you have it written down on paper or a scroll?
This is a very old essay that was written for Miss Pinder and I back in the day about someone saying that the biggest debate about the US Constitution is whether it should be written down on paper or on a scroll, which may have missed the point. Of what we were saying, but
shout out to Manali.
So Joe, I'm just going to let you finish, and I'm going to give you the right to just say about you what you've enjoyed about the Dutch elections and why they hearten you so.
I love the Dutch elections. I love Dutch politics because it's just chaos, really, but they sort of make it so it doesn't look that chaotic. I mean, they use about the most proportionate system you could have. So they use, I think it's the Hunt List PR.
With a very low threshold.
It's like 1%. And as a result, there are 15 parties in the Dutch Parliament, not limited to the Party for the Animals, as a...
Hey, go on, the guys. Let's go.
Denk. I think there's a party for Protestants and a party, if I'm not mistaken, for Catholics.
There's 50 plus. 50 plus is a party.
A pensioners,
yeah,
which is basically just a Conservative Party. There's about three far-right racist parties. So if you're a racist, you've got some variety there.
Oh, that's nice for the
people. A little bit racist.
Like, show, like, oh, so what you're saying, there's degrees of racist politics. Oh, brilliant. Well done, so, great for racists.
Yeah, and so the previous government, which was had the one of the racist parties in it, and the Conservative Party, and a new party called the New Social Contract, fell because the PVV, which is the sort of the Dutch version of Reform, collapsed the government. So they then had an election in which 15 parties won seats. No party got over 30% of the vote, but the non-racist party called D66, which is
they're basically
sort of
the Dutch Lib Dems, aren't they?
Yeah, they did really, really well. So it's sort of some light in a continent that, at the moment, is very keen on electing racists. However, considering no party got above 30% of the vote, there are going to be some very funky coalitions that are going to have to be formed out of this.
Excellent use of funky there.
Yeah, and I would say that is the other big PR objection. You're going to end up with a bonkers coalition somewhere. But,
are we going to wrap this up now?
We have to wrap this up because the video call is about to bring me off. But look, thank you so much for this semi-structured discussion of what's been going on.
I thought that flowed very nicely.
Well, I think so too. And given that virtually no one will be listening by this point, if you were still listening at this point, if you quote the word bananas and email it to newspeakpodcast@minister.com, I will send you a multi-pack of Whisper bars. I may or may not honour this promise.
Such a variety of conversation. We've gone from koala's chlamydia problem to...
is the level of intellectual...
I think Googling of D66 or D12 or whatever will go up massively now. Yeah.
Great endorsement.
Could go up by 66%. Right, well, look, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from Steph there. And also goodbye from Joe.
Goodbye.
Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.